Fred has some nice ideas sometimes that he was inspired through by reading the Rambam. You can't really say that that's the Rambam's opinion. Of course, if you want to know what the Rambam says, you have to figure out what the Rambam meant. Sometimes we ignore, we don't care what the Rambam says. Rambam said one thing, and we are entitled to express another possibility. Not everything the Rambam says is really what the Rambam says. He's inspired to say other things as well. Years ago, we used to say an expression that's attributed to different people. In one period of history, we used to say that in one period of history, three major works were written on the Rambam. So we used to say, Chaim takes the Rambam, and he forces his pshat into the Rambam. He said, Yer Sameach, with his sweet Tor, leads it to believe that that's what the Rambam is. And he said, actually, another Hebrew, which means remain unnamed. Probably you never look at it anyway. It's a major even now. He said, it's time to act out Chinese. It's time to write the Shema. It ain't that short. The introduction to that third sefer, one of the volumes of few lines, the introduction to that sefer, so the author writes an introduction that not every difficult Rambam can one parenthesis with a chemical analysis, by dissecting everything to its, breaking everything down to its component parts. So that's what he's going to write to explain some of the Rambam. So they say, when Abel saw that introduction, that not everything they pointed it out to him, so he said, El Kenish, Ulo Yachol. He's explaining every shot of Rambam with an analysis. And he can't. Sometimes what people say is clearly not the Kavanah of Rambam. Clearly not. Sometimes you're not sure. But still, you're open to say ideas, even if they're not the Rambam. Halacha l'maaseh, you gotta see what. If you're entitled to an opinion, okay? Maybe you're a chassid, you're a dear rabbi, you're also entitled to an opinion. If you would pass on your opinion against what the Rambam really said, probably not. Probably a person would have a little more humility to pass it against the Rambam. The Rambam writes that the way to develop a love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is to look into the world and see the beautiful sky and sun and stars and moon and everything, and all the animals and all the grass and everything. Say the Rabbah says he doesn't know where the Rambam got it from. The Pasuk in Kriyat Shema says not that. It says, "After Hashem alakach cholokol, after the chol yagach, or you have one way of shanech mitzal chayom ala oveh." So Rashi quotes from this Sifrei, not Pasuk. How does one get the control after? No, you have one way ala oveh by learning Torah. We believe our tradition has it. That's what Rashi goes through in one of his published essays. This idea appears both in the Balatanya and in the Nefesh HaChayim. About 99% they say exactly the same word for word, they quote the same Zohar, the same Gemara. So this is one of the 99% of the things that they say exactly the same. The 1% is Lamalva. So the issue that they were fighting about, it's a dead issue today, so nobody even cares about it. But 99% they say exactly the same. So one of the things that they write is that Kol Terukul is a description of Elokus. And they quote the Zohar that Pikud, the mitzvahs, even they warn them out that these are the limbs of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if a person learns Kalat Arkula, he will get a picture, get a glimpse of what Kodesh Baruch Hu is like. Kodesh Baruch Hu couldn't tell us exactly what a Lekus is. One of the Jewish philosophers in the Middle Ages wrote, Ilu Yidaitu Ha'isu. If I would understand the Lekus, I would think God himself, the only one who really understands the Kodesh Baruch Hu, is that Kodesh Baruch Hu himself. So if he wants to tell us what he's like, he can tell us. This is Elokus. E equals MC squared. Elokus is this. What is going to give us a formula? This is Elokus. We won't understand a word of the formula. I don't understand what E equals MC squared either. I don't know about physics for that. But if he would tell us outright what Elokus is, it would be gibberish. We wouldn't understand it. Because we're so far away. And they give us a marshal. The marshal also not good enough. They give a marshal and a marshal and a marshal. And that's why the Medrash refers to the whole Chumash as the marshal HaKadmai. Plus, you can say the Shmosa is Kashu Yama HaMashal HaKadmoini, they reshoi the Yetzi Vashit. So Rashi and Parash is Mishpatim, and the Pasuk of Elokim in the Yod, that quotes that Medrash. And where does it say, they reshoi the Yetzi Vashit? It says in the Pasuk, Elokim in the Yod, that's what says, they reshoi the Yetzi Vashit. So why is the Chumash referred to as the Mashal HaKadmoini?
מה שקורא ממנו, שהוא משולו של הקדוש ברוך הוא, שהוא קדמונו של עולם. חפץ חיים ברייטן יעשה את השם עולם. חפץ חיים היה זה כך מספר לדעת לושן הורא. Which are not so boring, not so scary in this form, and not so frightening. He tells me when it's mutter to tell Lashon Hara, when it's a mitzvah to tell. So not to just keep on saying, I'm going to burn it again, I'm going to burn it again. It's levity, it makes like a bir alochet. It makes a dish to burn it, bir alochet, and it's a levity. So this form of Lashon Hara, very fascinating. But he has more than that, even if you don't want to read the form of Lashon Hara, has form on Jewish hashkafa, on Jewish philosophy. Very good. All of this form of Jewish philosophy are wonderfully close with Russian, and Zoyas, and Agadatas, and anything that develops, both of them. So one of his many stories, Shem Olam, he explains why the Chumash called the Moshel HaKadmoy, it's the Shol HaShol Kadosh Baruch Hu, it's a Moshel of HaLakus. A Kadosh Baruch Hu couldn't give us a description of HaLakus, and he gave us like Shachayim explains, he gave us a Moshel of a Moshel of a Moshel. So the Chumash called it HaLakula, Shmoysim Shol HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Rambanai, the description of HaLakus. That's what we assume, the way to get a picture of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is by learning all about the Din and the Torah, and somehow we will get intuitively, we'll get a glimpse into HaLakus. You can only really love a person if you know something about the person. How do you fall in love with a girl? You see her. She's good looking. You do. Or you correspond. You never saw the girl, corresponded with the girl. A beautiful headdress. Or she's typing to me on the internet. She has good ideas. I have to have something that I fall in love. I know it's in a cave and I fell in love. Why should I fall in love with her? Did anybody say something? You have to know something about the person. Either the good looks, so she dresses nicely, or she's neat, or she's smart, or she writes well, beautiful, she draws well, she plays piano. I have to have something that I fall in love with. So then after I fall in love, so then I hear more. Ooh! And she knows how to cook also. And I fall in love with her. And then she read, we have 9 children. And she raised 9 beautiful, healthy children. Oh, there's more to fall in love. So the more you know about the person, but if you want to love someone, if there's what to love, so the more you know of my list and read the status of the person, so the more you go to another person, so the more a person knows about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so the more he will fall in love with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the more Torah a person learns, so the more he will get an understanding of some picture, a marshal of a marshal of a marshal, of what other course is like. So normally we assume, if the one is a greater tamachal, we probably know more about the truth. It's not necessarily so. Sometimes you have come in at a home and you don't look beyond the demons. They're not looking for the whole. They don't see the forest. They just see a tree over here and a tree over here. They don't see the whole beauty of the forest. But we assume that usually a person who is more learned than the other one will probably be a greater Oyel Hashem and a greater Yirei Shamayim, because that's the way to get to know the Lakus, is by learning this term. That's what some Yishayim hold. They say the Gemara in the Kiddushin. The Gemara says, at one place you have to stand up, some Yishayim hold, you have to stand up for a Chama Chacham, not because of Kavod HaTorah, because it was Yira Shamayim. So why do you stand? Why does the Gemara say stand up for a Chama Chacham? Because as my Rebbe used to say, Rabbi Gerel, we have no barometer with which to measure one's Yira Shamayim. We don't have an instrument to measure Yira Shamayim. We have a barometer to measure learning. You give a Bechina, you talk about it, you can tell. He knows how to learn better than him. He gets a 100 on the exam, he gets a 65 on the exam, he gets a 45 on the exam. He knows how to learn better than him. So usually we assume, not always correct, usually we assume that the one is more learned than the other one will probably know more about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or the male he will love HaKadosh Baruch Hu more, he will fear HaKadosh Baruch Hu more. And he'll be a more pious individual, so we stand up and the one is a greater Talmid Chacham, usually assuming, that he's a more pious person than the other one. Let's say you have a great Talmid Chacham, we know he's not pious. The Gemara says in Gittin, you don't stay there. You know that a person is a holy tzaddik, achsuni shereve, and he's not a tamachavim. So the Gemara says, you do stay there. Because we know that he's very pious. And that's what the Ran, in the first page of Kedushin, called Tzami Sharehov, and the mitzvah, they say, what talk about that, that brings up, and it's not a mitzvah to stand up out of Kavala Teiras, but rather to stand up out of respect for the Yerushamayim, and the Yavas Hashem, and the piety that the person has, on the assumption that the one with the greater tamachach will probably possess more of that. Where did that assumption come from? Because we assume that Kala Tarakula is a description of other sources. The person is learning it in a relaxed way. He's going to see a whole forest, not going to see 613 trees. He'll see a beautiful forest, and he'll be able to read in between the lines. He'll get a better picture of other sources than one would otherwise be able to.
Take Rambam anything
like that,
or should we just assume
the
rest?
Kind of helps also. Yeah, you see, wonderful ideas even sometimes, you know. Sometimes people, not everybody has the ability to see everything from the first. Some people get it from camera, but it enhances one's ability to see. Because both of the authors, whenever you read a book, the author always show the author, even if he hides himself, but something always comes out about the personality of the author. That's the Russian at the Zoya says, Man de Nova, me garme Nova. It says in Kumish, but he felt the apple, Nish Maschai. But the Zoya shall bring into other nation a breath of life. So the Zoya has a comment on the Pusik, the Nebuchadnezzar quotes him, Man de Nova, one who blows into someone else. Me delay Nova, me tech Nova, he blows from his inside. It means whenever a person composes music, a person makes a painting, a person writes a book, or what is a play, that he can't hide his personality. Something has to come out from that. So we assume that by the fact that the Darshan created the world, his godliness there in the world also. It would be better to be able to get it all from the Torah. Some people can't. It takes a long time to be able to get it from the Torah. Some people can get it from Tevah also. The author of the world is not going to be able to say that the Torah is from the world also. Some people find it easier to get it from the author. From the world. That's why Rilgamer was upset. They quote, I don't know if it's true. I wasn't there when he said. They quote the name of Rilgamer that he was upset about that Rambam was a big Rambam fan. So Lechi family big fan of the Rambam. But he's upset. He said, he didn't understand. Why did the Rambam write that? Why didn't he write? Why Rashi quotes from the Sifrei? And it's all taking creation.
Controlling his daughter. So then it's the same as any other mitzvah. A woman is exempt from the mitzvah of the Tinos Lulav.
אומר זה יצא את המביץ והבישי בפסוק, סיר וסרים הם אני עושה. וכשבאס את הבאמן, תראו את העבור להם ברחס, ושגיע את סירה מרמי, זה כמו מן מועס את הבאמן, תהיה את הבאמן תאירה, וזה סיים את הבאמן תאירה לי עוד המביץ, זה סייס לשעס מהרמי, זה שיציג זה, שבאמן שיבואן סתור, זה תאירה. ובואי לדען המאוד יגזור לשם שמה. שידה זו על המיץ, ושידה זו על תמיסת שיזה בגלת איתו, ושיבואן סתובה מנתיר, תקם כל הספקה לטוב, אחרי ביקנה מסתם. אבל משה פיינשטיין writes around so that she can't really ever wrote too much about these kind of things, but he's felt the same way as well. He said so exclusively. Moshe has a tshuva where he writes, but if some of the women are only motivated to learn Torah out of anger against the Jewish religion, against the rabbis, against the Orthodox position, we have been cheating the women for so many years and putting them down and treating them as if they're helpless. And that's why we just teach the Torah. We're going to show those rabbis, and we're going to show God who's right, and we're going to learn his Torah, and we're going to fit the great Torah to show that we're just as smarter than men. So what motivates them to learn Torah? The same thing about shaking the ruler. If the woman is motivated to shake the ruler, as an animal to the earth, not because she does all the bits of some of the Torah, but she wants to volunteer more. Why not? She has time. She has time. So let her shake the ruler. Come to show you, you know that. Come to more, but the motivation to fulfill a mitzvah that she's exempt from is out of a complaint against the religion, then to perform to the mitzvah constitutes an aveira. Well, it's obviously not a mitzvah. She's complaining against the religion. Then it's an aveira.
And even though the rabbi specifically speaks against it, it's not the lulav. There's no rabbi which says that any woman attacks the lulav is
aveira. The rabbi is called to be your mother, right? Your mother talks about a problem. See, Rabbi Soloveitchik introduced the study of Talmud for the women of Maimonides. That was 50 years ago. That was before the feminist movement, number one. Rabbi Soloveitchik never responded to outside pressures. He held fakir. If they're going in that direction, we go in the other direction. That's what he used to say. It's printed in the collections of the Russians, but the Chacham who translated it from Yiddish to Hebrew didn't have the book. So he killed it in translation. He used to say more than once, but the Talmud has an expression, Rabbi Akiva. He used to say, I'll call koitz, or koitz, pigay tilim shamaloch. An expression that he didn't know anyone else. He used to darshan on an old tabi. So he said, the darshanim in Europe used to say, I'll call koitz, or koitz, the Russian thorns. If the goyim or the apikurism are throwing thorns against our religion and attacking us, and that's when we're not going to budge, we're going to be more medactic in this. I'll call kites for kites. Whenever they throw thorns, then we're going to say, Tilly, Tilly, Shalallahu. We're going to be more didactic at that point. He said, we're not supposed to give it any pressures from the feminists, or from the Apikurism, or from the kissed Christians, whatever kind they have. We don't have to give any apologetics. This is our religion, this is what we stand for. We don't like it. He used to say sometimes an expression, which I will not say over, let them go somewhere. He used to say the whole expression. So the marshal, years ago, he used to pass it a lot of the mice. People were there. When a person died, he left only daughters, he didn't leave any sons. So the question is, who should say Kaddish? Should they ask a man to say Kaddish, a stranger? Or should one of the daughters come to Shul and say Kaddish? So that's a discussion in Yeriday, at the end of Yeriday. So this should be called to Kaddish. Yeriday says that the things Mikra did a woman. They said Kaddish, but it's not the minute. It's a violation of the minute. That was in the Chavis Yoris community, in Germany, I think. In other parts of Europe, in later years, the practice was that women did say Kaddish. My father comes from the Vizhnitsa area of Romania. My father went to the Vizhnitsa yeshiva in Europe. Later he came to, as a teenager, he came to America, learned the Mayu, learned the Moshe celebration. My father has members in his Vizhnitsa community. The Rav died. And his daughter came to shul every day. She was a little girl before Bas Mitzvah. She used to come to shul and say Kaddish in front of the shul. But they didn't have a minyan, it doesn't matter. Moshe writes his Shuvas also. As you remember in Vilna sometimes, I think he writes that the Vilna would come to the base marriage and say Kaddish once in a while. So Rav Soloveitchik used to say that where he came from, it wasn't like the Chavis, it wasn't considered a violation of the minute if a woman didn't say Kaddish. And he would recommend that it's preferable if a person dies and he needs only daughters, and of course, unless the woman feels uncomfortable, he thought that it's preferable if the woman should recite Kaddish before Asara Mitzvah, the presence of 10 men, not 10 women. She's preferable that the daughter should say Kaddish, rather than to ask a stranger to say Kaddish. If that was by Yama Mahim Azmanahu, that was 70 years ago, 60 years ago, 50 years ago. But in recent years, 15 years ago, one of the rabbis from Boston passed away. He only had two daughters, he had no sons. So the daughters planned on saying Kaddish. I was always, she said, no, now you're not allowed to say Kaddish. Because now that you have the feminist movement and the world too, they want equal rights, now if you're going to say Kaddish, it's going to have the connotation of complaining against to Orthodox tradition. He said, no, we shouldn't say Kaddish. He never gave in. He used to say, we don't have to give any apologetics. Whatever they don't like, that's their problem. We insist on observing what we do. So he introduced Talmud for the women and my mom. First of all, that's before the whole feminist movement. The guys weren't even reading about feminism. The ladies, they weren't reading about. Secondly, Maimonides is a different story. Maimonides, when it was founded, was the only day school of its kind in the whole of England, and possibly with a few in the whole United States of America. So it was a Nes Min HaShamayim, Kimat HaNes Nigler, that he succeeded in the first place. And he was petrified the first few years, it's never going to get off the ground, it's not going to work. No one wanted to send a child to yeshiva. The expression you guys don't know, I remember. My son should become a rabbi. My son, all the European, you think you go to yeshiva, you become a rabbi. You don't become a rabbi! You become a lawyer, you become a doctor, you become a computer analyst, you do whatever you want, you don't have to become. Elephant is not the Beis HaMikdash, one out of 1,000 becomes a rabbi. Now it's much more than 1 out of 1,000. But still, you don't have all the content enough to become rabbis. But years ago, that was the bug that all the Europeans had. They didn't want their children to become rabbis, even the religious Europeans. They didn't want to send their children to yeshiva. So, considering this antagonism, that they're considering this obstacle that they don't want to send their children to yeshiva, Kavahana, Dr. Rosh, Kavahana, you're going to have two separate schools, one for boys, one for girls, so I'll never succeed. So he had no prayer, Shantam Pakiri had no prayer, so he had to found a school with boys and girls together. So he wanted that the boys, when they graduate the high school, they should be able to go on to Yeshiva College or to some other place, even if there are a couple of places around, where you can continue to learn Gemara. So he's not going to teach Gemara, the boys are going to be able to continue. So he had to teach Gemara. If the boys and the girls are together, so he had no prayer, so he had to teach Gemara to the girls. It's a totally different story, what happened over there. Then in Stern College, the question was raised many years ago, should they offer a course for the girls in Stern College in Gemara if they're interested in studying? So they consulted Rabbi Soloveitchik, he said yes, he doesn't see what's wrong. Then he asked him, would he be prepared to show his approval by offering the first shiur? So he said, maskim, so he gave the first shiur in Gemara brachas, and they took the photograph and they printed. So that means he approves of all of the, of introducing Talmud in all the high schools in the world? No. I think it's a mistake that we teach Talmud to the boys in the high school. It's already given up and they don't understand one word of the Gemara. The boys don't understand what they're talking about. In Europe, in the gymnasium, my mother-in-law, my mother-in-law went to a gymnasium in Europe. She studied Kusari, Shmoni Prophet Rambam, in Tanakh, in Safa, in Siddur. She knew Hashkafa, she knows in Halacha, she knows Dina. Talmud, she doesn't know, but she knows a few Talmudic expressions from the literature that she read. She only visited Eretz Yisrael one summer years later. She spoke Hebrew beautifully. Never asked her from Europe. She went to gymnasium in Lithuania. She knew Hebrew very well. The program, the curriculum that they worked out, that they developed for the girls, was a wonderful curriculum. When he came to America, maybe they should have introduced that curriculum for the boys. The boys' curriculum is at Kaporis, is terrible. So instead of introducing the curriculum that they worked on that was very successful for the girls, instead of introducing that possibly for the boys, so the girls were complaining they want equal rights, so they took the lousy curriculum that was still shoving down the throats of the boys, now they shoved it down the throats of the girls. So what are they doing out of it? Nothing. I won't give up. Government got both for a year. The boys don't know how to learn, the girls don't know how to learn. Everybody has to wait until they come to the year that they learn in Eretz Yisrael to start learning the halacha of a parent's order. I remember a father came over to me to complain. His daughter was going to a certain high school. So the first year she went to the high school was wonderful. He said, father's lawyer, busy lawyer, whole week, active in the OU. Nice man, not so learned. He finished college and that's it. He went to TI college. So he says, the daughter, every Shabbos, at the Shabbos table, he sees the children, all the children never see him, Shabbos he sees him. So the daughter would say, oh, the little halacha that she learned, Pasha Sashabu, Shek, so it was good for her, it was good for the mother, good for the father, good for the guy's father. So the second year, the daughter did so well, the first thing is put him in an honors program. Honors program, they study Gemara. No more Pasha Sashabu, no more halacha, study Gemara. Which Gemara? Sanhedrin. Which part? Then Sarah Ramayra. So his daughter comes home, well, who needs it? She doesn't need it, he doesn't need it, his wife doesn't need it, the children get nothing out of it. It's fucking ridiculous. Why don't they teach? Hashkafish, minor problem, teach what they taught in Europe. They figured out a good system. It's a disaster. The whole curriculum of teaching the boys is a disaster. So the women insisted that they want equal rights, they want the same garbage that they teach the boys. It's terrible. And everyone is afraid to take the first step. It's straight to hell. So if what motivates the women, yeah, maybe. comes, if an older woman who knows what she's doing, intelligent woman, wants to learn Gemara, it is okay if she's religiously motivated. But what you have sometimes is women are not so medactic in the mitzvahs that they're obligated to keep. They don't just see as the, and they're not so medactic on kashrut, not so medactic on the things that they have to be medactic. All of a sudden, their heart volunteered them to be misnadev, to learn Gemara. Maybe he says, who asked you to volunteer? First do what you're obligated to do. If you want to have the icing on top of the cake, you have to have the cake. If the woman is taka shemeres mitzvahs, and everybody's talking about the she wants to be also, so wonderful. So she'll get the status. Yeah, but we have no problem. In our program that we sponsor this year for the women, we have no problem, because once the women hear who the Magide Shir are, everybody knows what these Magide Shir stand for. And they know, either they like that hashkafa and they're going to come, if they don't like that hashkafa, they just leave. So we don't even have to check anybody's tzitzis. The motivations are pure. If they want to come to hear Rabbi Michael Rosenzweig say shir, or Rabbi David Hirsch or the others that we have say shir, they know what they get. They know what his opinion is on the women's great groups. They know where he stands. All these people are very outspoken. They know where they stand on all the issues. And they know what they're getting into. And that's it. And the programs are very successful. A lot of people are there.
I was wondering, what was it going to feel about, as Jewish life is, we're, in America especially, we're the culture of the American culture and all around us surrounds us and affects us. And to what extent do we, does our life change as we, from life in Europe, to life in America, and even life in Israel nowadays, it's also very modern. To what extent do we allow changes to occur? And what types of changes do we allow to occur? And what extent do we say no, we're steadfast, and certain changes can occur? What's our criteria for deciding?
It's a very serious question. It needs a lot of discussion. I got to get back to Yerushalayim life, so it's much more than 5 minutes. There are, I believe, 5 minutes. Sometimes there are halachas and minhagim that have to change. Other times not, just to give as a marshal. We were speaking about this just earlier today. Some people think we don't dress the same as our parents, our grandparents dressed, with the drying all of the cuffed up and everything in the white socks and everything's going to be exactly the same, and that's all, we'll be protected. So Yitzchak Avinu was such a person. Yitzchak Avinu, in the Chumash, we have all the essence of Yitzchak Avinu described as a colorful personality. Yaakov didn't describe all the things about Yitzchak. After very, very little described about Yitzchak. What is it about Yitzchak? He dug the exact same wells as his father Avraham. They gave him the same names that Avraham Avinu did. What is that all about? So Rav Tzvi Meitzchik refers to a Zohar passage in the Zohar. One of his essays says that Yitzchak preserved the Masorah. He dug the same wells and he gave the same names because he followed everything that Avraham Avinu did. That's really necessary sometimes if you let's say Rav Soloveitchik was such a dazzle genius, unbelievable. Such a genius, he was so, sparkling, people couldn't get over it. So the next generation, you have to have people who just carry over the tradition. If every generation, everyone's going to be machadish everything, so everything from the earlier generation is going to be lost. So Avraham Avinu was this great personality, he was a pioneer, his halet was panai. He was a pioneer, he was going blazing trails. And Yitzchak had just maintained everything. So he dug the same wells and he gave the same names everything. So that's why the Chumash says that this person, Yitzchak, followed everything like Avraham Avinu. Now he wrote the Oretz. There was a famine. Dovad Haro, Arish, and Hashem, Oyev, and Avraham. So Yevet Avraham, how does it say? But Yevet Yitzchak, Lavanach, no, Gror. Lavanach, no, Fishnu, Gror. What's going on? So Rashi fills you in for the message. Yitzchak Avinu is going to do exactly like his father did everything we said. There's a famine. You've got to go down to Mitzrayim. So he's on the way to Mitzrayim. Baruch Hashem said, what are you doing? You're not doing the same as your father. You were offered as an oiler klima. An oiler korban oiler is nixal b'yotze. Your father wasn't a korban oiler. If your father would have been a korban oiler, he wouldn't have gone to Mitzrayim either. Chutzul b'kaymar. You're not, but you think you're doing the same as your father, you're being Mishana. Sometimes people think they're doing exactly the same, they're being Mishana. You find the same thing by Yeshua Benun. Yeshua Benun, now, by Yomish Mitach Oral, Mamish is always holding Moshe Rabbeinu's hand, he doesn't let him go to the Beis HaKiseh. He's always there, by Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu goes in Hasina, he's standing there. than me with everybody else, he's standing next to our seat. So you find in the Navi, he said, Yeshua, when he waged a battle against Yericho, so he made a cherem against Yericho. Everything is hedgish. Where did he get such a knife from? The Rebbe tells you, Yitami. The Rebbe says, it's an hedgish. And David, that all the four words that Moshe Rabbeinu waged, he made the same cherem. And the same chereman, the same character, Achan, violated all the haram. He violated the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, violated. So Yeshua ben Nun does exactly the same as the Rebbe. He wages war, he makes everything hedgish. And then the Rebbe Shalom says, Tipish, what did you do? Who told you to make a cherem? So the Marshal quotes the Kashrut. What do you mean who told you? He did exactly what the Rebbe did. So the Marshal said, no, it wasn't exactly. Moshe Rabbeinu lived in a different period of history. Kodem Shal Yisrael HaSayyadim, there was no bit of Kol Yisrael HaRevi Zerbizim. Shal Yisrael HaSayyadim, the Pasuk says, Amik Ros Lolo, Vanei Radovim, that's all in the same doctrine. No, it's all in the same symbol. So why don't you use your brain, an ounce of brain? In the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, the same guy violated the chair. So he'll burn in Gehenna, but the other people are not going to suffer. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu said, Yarden, one person is going to sin, everybody will be punished, because the Kol Yisrael HaRevi is up there. So what Yeshua ben Nun thought he's doing exactly the same as the Rebbe, it wasn't exactly the same. Not exactly. If you live in a different period in history, you have to analyze, is it the same, is it not the same? But Rav Chaim was opposed to Mizrahi. Koyim HaKom Samdina. Rav Chaim was opposed after HaKom Samdina. And Rav Yishkom, he died before HaKom Samdina. So all the people are opposed to Mizrahi today because Rav Chaim was opposed. That's their decision. If Rav Chaim would be alive today, he would still be opposed to Mizrahi. Maybe Koyim HaKom Samdina, Luchud Rach HaKom Samdina. No, everything is the same. It's a different world. The world keeps on changing every minute. It's a different shaila. The Torah changes. The Torah doesn't change. The Metzias are different Metzias. You have to keep your eyes open to see, is it the same Metzias? Is it a different Metzias? Things are always changing. We have a lot of times people that Hasidim think they're carrying over the exact same tradition. That's not the exact same thing. And the Hasidim walk in the middle of Manhattan with their long kapotles. In Europe, they didn't walk in the middle of a Goyish Yisrael. The Jews lived in a ghetto, a separate section. They dealt with the Jews. They didn't live in the outside world. It's different. But a chassid today lives in a modern community and his sisters teach him where langer pay is. And he goes to a school where no one else wears langer pay is. His parents didn't send him to a school where no one else had pay is. He went to school. Everybody had pay is. They also had pay is. This is your decision. You may think you're doing the same with your father. It's not necessarily the same. But the circumstances are different. It could be that this is such a major change that it's a different ballgame. Okay, so in every mitzvah we have to reopen every issue. You know, in medicine the treatments keep on changing from hour to hour. Not only the treatment that they gave last week, you can sue your doctor if you gave that treatment this week because they've already published the medical journal that it's all wrong. Sometimes they'll change from the morning to the afternoon. They'll already discover that that's wrong. You got to do it differently. The whole world is changing. The technological advances are so rapid. Everything has changed. So you have to ask on every issue. But the Basa B'cholim is still the same. Are the babies still fleshy? The milk still not fleshy. Everything you have to ask the same. Maybe the babies are not fleshy. There's a Shlomo Lebul that has Ben HaBokar Asher also, that the reason why Avraham Avinu had Basa B'cholim because it was part of the flesh. Sometimes the flesh is not fleshy. Sometimes part of it. You got to keep your eyes open. Every time there's a scrap in the machinery, you have to keep your eyes open with a big picture. Sometimes you're looking over here, I don't see any shinui. Yeah. You have to, the shinui is over there. Sometimes the shinui is far away. About it is in Medina, Kodim HaMedina, Lach HaMedina, Kodim Mohamed Sheish HaTayimim, Lach HaMohamed Sheish HaTayimim, Kodim Mohamed HaFratz, Lach HaMohamed HaMifratz. In America also, everything is changing. Sometimes you have to shtelzach, sometimes you have to insist, no, we've got to be mesakish, we're going to be medactic, dafka on this meaning, like a cold cuts to cuts, whenever you feel a thorn, we have to be medactic more. Sometimes like Rabbi Hirsch writes in his Chorei, he writes on Dvar Mekudoshim, Kol Shikonshim, Yikam Yifso Belinda, Yod Valayim. Kachin the best Mekudosh it is, you stay on the Balai Lechem. The more Mekudosh it is, and the faster it becomes out of date. So Rabbi Hirsch writes that there are many Minhogim that are very holy Minhogim, that beshaid that they were holy Minhogim, but sometimes they're out of date. So sometimes you have to look around and realize that it's no longer time to observe that Minhogim. Sometimes the Minhogim don't last forever, and it's not like a Takon of the Rabbanu that you need a Minyacher to be Machkir. Sometimes if the Minhogim no longer has the connotation that it had before, so you don't observe the minute. You don't need a bevel to be about the minute. Moshe, I live in Washington Heights. So the rabbi in the community for many years used to be Rabbi Shlomo. He used to have very interesting insights. So Moshe used to say, You know, the Yekis and Hungarians have a minute, they don't eat chicken on Pesach. Why they don't eat chicken on Pesach? Because the chickens used to eat grain from Europe. They said about their places, and Menachos, they talk about sheep. That's the Menachos. So Shulchan Aruch, they have a hill with Pesach. The Shabbat is saying, you cook the chicken, and then on Pesach, you open it up, and you see a grain. And the grain was cooked with the water, the whole thing is chametz. So they had a minute, not to eat any chicken. So you don't get a bar. Rabbi Schwab always used to say, Allah hate in America that they don't feed grain for the chickens, they give them corn on the cob, they give them maize. Tiras, what do you call it? It's a tiras. So he said, the whole minute doesn't apply. So he said, you don't need a person time. The minute doesn't apply anymore. It's permissible to eat chicken. Well, many things like that, Moshe Rabbi Schwab used to say, these kind of things about when the Shtaratan used to be very insightful. The Gemara says that you have to wear a kanki when you don't. You have to be fully dressed in a formal fashion when you want to dance. So in Bavel, in the days of the Amoraim, the Goyim used to wear a sash in the middle for fancy shmitz. That was nice. Except today, in America, who wears a sash in the middle? And the French dresses with some of the have a sash in the middle. Normal people, but they don't wear a sash in the middle. They say today, to be fully dressed, you wear a tie. He says today, the gartel has to be translated into American in terms of a tie. You're not allowed to dabish one ass unless you have a tie. So they tell over these humorous anecdotes about the Chassidish guy who's in business in the office, and he has to daven mincha. So then he takes a kohal to find the daven. So they got a daven mincha, it has no garbage. So he takes off his tie, and he's the daven mincha. You have to wear the tie, not the garbage. The garbage, when he was there, Mashmoy Shal Klum, this man, he says, the tie if he comes. But you have to know how to translate. That's an observation. That's what you're asking. That you need an unwritten observation. They often say that this meaning in Europe meant this. And to translate it now in this new organization, this new society, it means this. You have to know how to translate not just from Yiddish to English when you say the Shir. If you translate the Shir originally, said the Shir in Yiddish, then after a while, you saw not enough boys on the same Yiddish, and you can use the first one from the older rabbi to say, you have to translate sometimes the Minhagim, like Rabbi Schwab said. The din of wearing a garbo means today, to wear a tie. Doesn't mean to wear a garbo. The chayin of a chayin, you see the chassidim, they wear a garbo. They close their eyes to the one, they say, we're doing exactly as our parents did. You're not doing exactly, you live in a different world. It's not the same. You have to consider the whole picture. What you're doing, the new thing is the same. It's not the same. You have to have a Russian who are looking to open their eyes up and they see. That's what it says in Lesbik said, the Yudish Allah, the Father of Krishna, the Horus, Rashi calls the famous Medrash to be mistaken a yeshiva beis hayro, the pastor. What do they need in advance? Then they'll come, they'll unpack the valises, and they'll have a good night's sleep, and then they'll open a yeshiva the next day. Kids can't have off one day. No, it didn't mean a yeshiva has smart and little tire. It meant you're going to move to a whole different world, it's a different avodah zarah, not the same zarah skinam. Everything is a different world there. So all the dinim have to be restudied. Maybe the flesh is parallel. Maybe the milk is parallel. Everything has to be researched all over again. All the dinim, the way we observe them in Eretz Kenan. Maybe you have to change everything in Eretz Yisrael. So that we got to learn. We have to keep our eyes open to see what's relevant. And we're just gradually discussing. I got to leave. We're just discussing. Now in Wadi, for security purposes, they introduce some grace of God and introduce a little bit. Being mamish secure, bitachon, so they have movie cameras taking pictures of all the doors. If you can't walk in or out of the buildings without being televised. Now the guy's sitting watching all the screens, and I think they keep the tape. So they have an Anna Shabbos also, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, bitachon. I was like, so for Shabbos, you're not walking in and out of the buildings on Shabbos because you're quite safe. When you walk in front of the cameras on Shabbos, because. So, there's a kuba. If you can avoid it, you should. So we were trying Shabbos after that, we want to avoid it. To come in, you have to come in front of the camera. To go out, they go in front of the walking out. So one of the guys said, dear Rebbe, what do you accomplish by walking out the sideway? But he said that in space, and out of space, as there are movie cameras that are taking movies of everybody walking all over. So you're not allowed to walk in the street anywhere. Now look, it's not exactly so. Sometimes they are, sometimes they're not. Okay. But you see, if you ask a shayla, so if a person doesn't look up, even if he looks up, he can see. If it does not affect that someone's taking movies all the time, so you're always right around that. You have to rely on the heifer. What do you accomplish by going out that door? They can come up while you're in front of the camera. There's always, well, now I'm behind the camera. There's always on the camera. Whenever a shayla is posed, you have to keep the consideration the whole arum in arum. You have to know the whole hekev of the mitzvahs in order to pass from the shayla. But in every case, sometimes the guy will translate in the new terminology what's in it. Sometimes it doesn't change it. That's a very, very serious issue. That's why we need all of you people and all the yeshivas and everybody to sit and learn more than in earlier generations. The days of the Baal Yatari says the world hasn't changed so fast. The Chafetz Chaim writes in one of his essays, one of his books on Hashkafa, he writes, years ago history used to go very slowly. We used to record history by how many years it was before the Sreifa, how many years it was after the Sreifa, like in Wayum, we used to record history. How many years before the Machlokes? How many years after the Machlokes? Then we had so many Machlokes. Now there's a Sreifa every year. So we can no longer record history by that. So he says, and how come? So he's guessing, so he thinks the Rebbeinu Shlomo wants to hasten the Bias HaMashiach. It's like you move history and fast forward. So everything is happening so fast, he wants to hasten. That's what he's guessing. He was a man who was always dreaming. So in their days, in the days of the Mishan Machron, things were going very slowly. So the Tidema came out the same, so every generation there was one Shaila, so they sat for a week and they sat for a year and they decided the Shaila. Now it's every day there's another Shaila. You have to have people who have a hekiv, they have to know the Mitzvahs, have to know the Halach is cold. You just look, you have a Shaila and Gittin, just get a look, Gittin, Salom HaSpik, you have to know all of Shas. So you people have to, I'm already an old man, you people have to carry on. You have a tremendous achrayus to carry on the whole tradition of the Torah to the next generation. You have to have intelligence and seichel to see what's happening in the world, to see the changes. Don't close your eyes and say that nothing is changing. Everything is changing. It's changing faster than in the days of the Chafetz Chaim, 1,000 times faster. Every minute is changing. You have to have seichel and pictures to know which Gemara applies and which Sif and Shulchan Aruch. And sometimes these cases are so far-fetched, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't quote them, but everything is in the Gemara. Every single shayla that come out, every shayla you can find it out in the Gemara. Just have to know which Gemara to relate and how to analyze and how to relate the Gemara. So that's what you're all here for. That's what you have to learn. It's not enough 1 year. I belong to the parents union. The parents are upset about Shana Beth and Shana Gimel and Shana Dalet, and I have 2 daughters who are married, live in Eretz Yisrael. Of course parents are upset. They want the children to be near them. They enjoy seeing the children. That's keep it up to be Mahalat parents. But people have, you have an achrayus to the Klal Yisrael. You have to have people sit and learn. You're going to go back to America and go to universities. So you're going to go to a full-time university, you never succeed. You have to try to convince your parents to let you stay as long as possible and to learn in an atmosphere of all day long. It's very different. Learn 2 years, half a day, is not at all the same as learning 1 year a whole day. Learn a whole day long is very different. The Gemara tells a story by Rabbi Akiva. As an Ishai, that famous time, he went out with Sunnis, so Rabbi Akiva's wife gave permission to go to Yeshiva, to get ready. 14 years or something, I forgot the Gemara. So he came back after 14 years and was about to knock on the door. And he heard, the Gemara tells him, he heard the way his wife is talking to the next door neighbor. The next door neighbor says, what a miserable husband you have. He never comes back. He gave him permission to go to Yeshiva, he never comes back. That's terrible. Where's no family? So the wife says, my husband is running Torah, halavai, he should stay in Yeshiva another 14 years. So he heard that, he didn't even walk in, he went back to the yeshiva. So Maksim Ha'olam, she didn't come in and say, hi darling, how are you, give his wife a kiss, stay overnight, and say goodbye, he gave me permission. Well, no, he didn't come, he didn't even stop to say hello. What kind of terror of him is he? Stop, say hello, you're there, you're knocking on the door. So,